following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
This is your host, Mark Toro, speaking. With me in the studio, I have Tom Ross across the great blue head of knowledge through the glass. You guys can see him.
Right here and ready and raring to go.
And we have, did Charlie call in yet? Not yet.
Not yet, but he said he would.
Okay, we'll have Charlie Saladino on the phone. Hassan Godwin is on assignment. And I guess Hermes Nurture is like snowed in somewhere because once again we're having another crazy winter out there, and it's snowing and sleeting and icing and whatever's out there. So this will be the third snow edition of It Came From the Radio this year, which is amazing because I think this is our third show this year, right? Third week this
year. Just know how to pick them. It's like the snow is deliberately looking for the broadcast.
Yeah, I guess so. At least, I remember way back when we did the other show, it used to be on Thursdays, we had the blackout. It was the first day of the blackout. We had a show, and we had a guest was supposed to come down, and it was a blackout, so that was very interesting to do. So if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com and listen to us on our live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can actually see me sitting here in the studio, along with Tom, on just click on the little watch us on the webcam. You can actually see us in 10-second intervals, waving hi on the webcam. And the phone number here, area code 61-888-8811. Let's see. I guess I'll just take it away with the news while I'm waiting for Charlie to call in. Actually, he should be calling in any second now. Let's see. I guess we'll start off with the news at Anne Hathaway has been reportedly announced to become the role as Catwoman in the new Batman movie, which is called The Dark Knight Rises, if I'm not mistaken.
Be interesting to see how they handle her as either a total villainess, villainess turning into a good guy, or a good guy mistaken for a villainess. Catwoman has been one of those villains that's always sort of changed to reflect her time.
Yeah, but I think one of the rules of Catwoman is that you have to be able to fit into the outfit.
Yes.
And I guess you have to ooze some type of sensuality.
Oh, yeah. I'm remembering the first Catwoman in Batman.
Julie Newmar?
No.
Eartha Kitt.
Oh, boy. Talk about... For one thing, her nickname really was the Tigress. And boy, did she have that dangerous sexual cat thing down to an absolute T. She didn't even have to work at it. Well, you know, whenever she was featured, you can imagine there was as many dads in front of the sets as there was kids.
Yes, yes. But my personal preference was Julie Newmar as the Catwoman.
She was good. She was good. I never had a chance to see Halle Berry do it. I did see the Catwoman in the Batman film, which I thought was a little over the top, to be
Michelle
honest
Pfeiffer?
With you. Yeah.
There you go. I believe that would be Charlie calling in because he just called me by accident. So, so congratulations to Anne Hathaway. I guess everybody would know that she's best known for The Princess Diaries, and I guess Love and Other Drugs was her last movie that she was on. Would I be right when that would be Charlie on the phone?
It's Charlie.
Hello, Charlie.
Hey, how you doing?
Did you call me by accident?
Maybe, just now.
Yes, just now.
Oh, yeah, that might have been me.
I was like, I wonder if he gets the number to call into the station.
Yeah, you know what? It's called dialing without your glasses.
Always a fun thing to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a little slice of heaven.
Yeah, it's called Ma Bell Casino.
Yeah, right.
Round and round and round she goes, and who she disturbs, nobody knows.
That's it.
So, Charlie, I was just doing the news. I just mentioned that Anne Hathaway was going to be Catwoman in a new Batman movie.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and I made the point that the nature of Catwoman seems to change over the decades to reflect the time and the role of woman that she appears in.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Did you see the Halle Berry Catwoman, Charlie?
Yes.
And what is your opinion of her in the role? Not the movie itself, but just her. How did she do as Catwoman?
I thought she gave it a very, I don't know. I happen to really like Halle Berry. And
name me a male who doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. And the suit was definitely made for her. As for Lee Meriwether and Julie Newmar and Eartha Kitt, and if I'm forgetting another one, I don't know. Michelle Pfeiffer, yeah. So, I think in all the Catwomans, as Tom said, they all bring a different persona to it.
Right.
And you know, so I think Hallie was fine. I mean, it was good. She made it more. She made Catwoman more of a hero than a villainess.
Yes, that is very true. But although I'd say that the movie was terrible, but she was good in it. That's the best compliment I can give her.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You know, she played a very schoolgirl type of Catwoman. You know, like
yes.
When she wasn't Catwoman, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
All right. Well, as a matter of fact, in the most recent cartoon version of Batman. The way she was played, well, she was played as a executive of her own multinational corporation by day, sort of like the female Bruce Wayne, and the Catwoman by night, whose crimes were mostly involved with taking revenge for the environment against corporate polluters or committing crimes that would somehow help out the environment. And to go all the way back to when the character was first introduced back in the 30s or whatever. Well, first of all, she didn't wear any particular costume, and second of all, she was portrayed as really little more than a cat burglar who snuck into apartments and removed all the valuables and left. And like I said, her role tends to evolve and change along with the role of women as the years and decades go by. To you see her at the point where she is now. Like, for example, in the 60s, during the original Batman series, the way she was portrayed was as, a feminist businesswoman who was striving to, was not trying to hide her identity or so forth, was proud of the fact she was a woman, and was trying to establish her credentials in a male-dominated, high-pressure field. That happened to be international crime was just sort of a sideline.
Yeah.
And I've also seen her portrayed in many other different ways, and even this... the fact that she is supposed to have, at the very least, a sort of crush on Batman is portrayed as something that she has full control over, as opposed to a schoolgirl sort of thing, and is very much shown as being as her choice. Whereas back in the day, before that, back in like the 50s, before she was shown as, a Hellcat, or Spitfire, you know, just a nasty female rebel, or as someone who would just, oh dear, I can't imagine why I'm so naughty type thing. But like I said, she's probably the villain who's evolved most over the course of the Batman series, both book, TV, and movies.
Right.
Because she reflects the role of women in our society. At the time the role is being filmed. As a matter of fact, I'm told that at the time of the that right after that, the original Batman series, a lot of little girls wanted to be Catwoman for Halloween and so forth, and a lot of them to this day say it had a great influence on them.
Yeah.
And both Julie Newmar and having the senior moment again.
Eartha Kitt,
yeah. We're always having little girl, and later young woman come up and saying, you were such an influence on me, and you're showing them the pictures of them in their catgirl suits and so forth.
Big thing.
Yeah.
So, speaking of comics and Catwoman.
Speaking of comic books, makes the segue.
Wizard Magazine, actually they're a good friend to us, and they've actually did a convention for us. They've actually helped us out a lot. They have announced that they're going to stop publishing their Wizard Magazine and Toy Fair. The rumors are flying all over the place as to exactly what's going on. Rumors are ranging from everywhere that they fired the entire staff, all the way to that the magazine is just going to be published online. So it's an amazing thing that Wizard Magazine, the great magazine that is, will be no more.
Huh. Was any reason given for it? Were the sales really that bad? Or?
Well, I mean, it's basically the sign of the times. Comic books as itself is just a 3-month window. So any news that you can get from Wizard Magazine would already be found online or anywhere on the other sites.
Yeah.
The only thing that would keep it going is just like exclusives. But what exclusives can you get in the magazine that you can't find somewhere else?
True, or collector's value, I suppose. But you can't get long on that.
Right. Even if you put it out, try to save money and put the mag out annually. Like maybe, once every 2 months or something, you're going to be missing things that are current. So by the time people get that magazine, it's going to be old news.
Yeah, so it's just one of those dying things. And, I guess advertisers have found that it's better to go somewhere else. So, it's a weird thing, Even though Wizard has been known to be the quote-unquote evil corporation, they've always been good to us. And it's kind of bad that at this time of day, people are losing jobs and they're getting fired left and right. And, that's the end of the magazine.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to that. Was the convention, when is it, in New York?
Yeah, there's
In May.
Yeah, in May.
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm looking forward to that.
So hopefully, that the company will be able to survive without their magazine pumping in money into the business. Now it's going to be, I guess, just the website and the conventions that's going to be their moneymaker.
Yeah, well, we're gonna promote those conventions. So they're our friends. So
yeah,
they got a good product. So get it out there.
Mm. And along the same lines of comic book news, it's just been the issue came out, I believe it was this week, of the Fantastic Four, where one of the four characters dies. For those of you who don't know, Marvel is saying that it's such a groundbreaking idea to kill off one of the main characters and blah, blah, blah. But they tend to forget that they've done this at least 5 or 6 times before as the course of the comic book has been out. The biggest one that they did was when they killed off Reed Richards, and they changed the book to the Fantastic Three, and they made a big whole stink about it, and they said how that he wasn't coming back, and for months and months they said he's not coming back, and then, he came back. So, despite the fact that it's all a whole bunch of hoopla, they decided to kill off the Human Torch. So, now it's no more Human Torch, and it's just the Fantastic Three again, and, that's the end of that.
Wow. What does Sue have to say about that?
Well, she was so upset about her husband dying. I guess this one is, it's just my brother.
Yeah. It's really wear and tearing on us. Can't you kill off the thing? I don't know him.
If you think about it, the 60s cartoon Fantastic Four didn't even have the Human Torch in it. They had Herbie the Robot. So, it was because they were afraid to have kids emulating the Human Torch and putting themselves on fire, so they replaced the Human Torch with Herbie the Robot.
Well, that was...
Maybe it was the 70s, because I know...
It was the animated cartoon show. I don't think it was ever the book.
No, I'm saying the cartoon.
Oh, yeah,
they got rid of the...
Oh, yeah, that I remember. And I also remember that in the book, they actually had Herbie robots to have a little bit of commentary.
Yeah, so it's just weird how they're trying to make a big deal out of something that's very commonplace now.
Yeah, I wish I had even a penny for every time a comic book character has died and they sworn he'll never come back, and all of a sudden, hey, guess what? We made a mistake. Here he is in the super duper double deluxe brand new edition.
the search for more money.
Yeah. Amount of money it will make.
They actually, if I'm not mistaken, there used to be an unspoken rule about comics that only Bucky, which would be Captain America's assistant, and Jason Todd, who was the second Robin, never came back. And then they brought both of them back. So now I don't think there's one character that has died in the comic world that has not come back in one form or another.
Yeah. How many of us have that Superman issue?
Yes.
I do.
I mean, I remember it was the poly bag, and you had to wear the armbands, and it was just a big thing that Superman dies. And then a year later, he came back.
I don't know. I'm just reminded of back in the 60s. There was a commercial. It was for a hair gel. The brand they used to call that greasy kid stuff. And what involved was a number of celebrities all going, "I came back, I came back, I came back, I came back." And the last would be a beautiful woman saying, "And we're glad that they did." Matter of fact, after they even did a parody of it, they showed this is, of course, the heyday of the NASA space flights. They showed a capsule splashing down in the Pacific and being recovered, and three astronauts pop out. One says, "I came back, I came back, I came back," and then a frogman pulls off her helmet and shows it's a beautiful woman, says, "And we're glad that they did."
So I guess, you know, in my opinion, just having somebody die off no longer has the weight as it used to, because they're going to bring them back. So I think that's actually a bad marketing ploy as it is.
Yeah, it's stale. Very stale.
Yeah, definitely. Beating the dead horse.
So it looks like we keep on hitting the same five or six phrases every week. Beating the dead horse, search for money, it's just running, you know. Yeah. It's weird how
Could you imagine that conference room or that meeting room?
Yeah.
Oh, what are we going to do? We're losing money. Hey, let's kill somebody off. No, we did that already. How much money did we make when we did that? Lots. Let's do it again. There you go.
Yeah, there's got to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, if I can bring up an example from a different genre, if you might remember a few years ago on St. Patrick's Day, one of the networks did a two-part movie called Leprechauns, and without boring everyone with the plot, basically a fairy wants to marry a leprechaun, and their clans are at war, and so they go to a neutral third party and ask for advice on what to do, and he thinks for a moment and says, "Have you thought about dying?" And then after everyone's good and sad, suddenly coming back to life.
Yeah.
So speaking... Well, actually, I don't even have a segue for this.
Wait. Before... I'm sorry to interrupt you. But before, you know, on that order, didn't they do that in the second Fantastic Four movie? They killed Sue?
Yeah, they killed Sue.
And she came back.
Yeah, in the movie, which, you know, once... I didn't think... for one second, I think she was dead. I was like, yeah, she's not dead.
I knew she was dead, but I didn't think she was going to stay dead.
Oh, yes, that's, yes.
Yeah. Because, you know, you kill off Jessica Alba, that's it for me.
Well,
I'll never buy into the franchise again.
They're actually saying that they're going to have a whole new cast and a whole new Fantastic Four characters when the next movie comes out, which should be soon. Well, actually, what makes sense is that they're going to tie this in when bringing Human Torch back to the next movie, which would be out, I guess, after the whole Avengers thing.
Why do they always do that? Why do they find the need to make a remake of the movie without the original people?
Cheap thrills?
Might be money. Because there's so many reasons. You know, money would be the first thing on my mind. Like, why get, why pay the same cast more money when you can just have the old cast? Are you being attacked by dogs?
No, not at all. Not at all. That's my paging system.
Oh, okay.
Well, also there's the problem that real people, as opposed to comic book characters, have this distressing tendency to grow old. And you want to appeal to a certain, let's be honest, young geographic, usually tilted towards young men, and having the heroine with wrinkles just ain't going to do it if you're a cold-blooded movie producer. So yeah, they might want to update the also by update by changing the cast. That's what they can also get away with, changing the entire direction of the franchise if they want. You know, like the last Star Trek movie would be a great example of that. You know, totally setting out in a whole new, essentially a whole new universe.
Yeah, I guess I can go with that also. I mean, it's just annoying. But, however, when they switched to Hulks, I think it was a good move because I believe that Ed Norton did a much better job than, what was the guy, the Australian, Eric Bana. Mm-hmm.
So, oh, my
guess,
God.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it does
movie,
work.
That movie was like, oh, my God, you could buy that, for 99 cents every place now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Eric Bana one?
Yeah, oh, God.
And that was only like 5-6 years apart.
Yeah.
And of course, now we're going to have a new Hulk, so, you know, yeah. So much
that's
for that.
That's because Ed Norton doesn't play well with the other, you know.
Yes, yeah. That's what they say, and that's what the rumor is.
Yeah, and there's another thing, too, from the point of view, again, of cold-blooded corporate executives. Come think of it, are there any other kind? But you don't want actors getting the idea that they're indispensable and really jacking up their rates. I mean, they get paid enough as it is, if you're at least from the point of view of Hollywood. And by changing them around like that shows that they're not as indispensable as they like to think. I mean, that was one of the that's basically what got George Lazenby axed from the Bond series after only one movie. He just thought that nobody could fill his shoes, or at least his agent didn't, and he asked for what Barcoli and his partner thought was far too much money, and they said, "We'll get back to you on that." And they picked up the phone and called Roger Moore.
Wait
a minute! Didn't back for one right after that?
I'm sorry.
Didn't Sean Connery?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Sean Connery reluctantly agreed to come back for one more after that.
Right.
I gather he was not happy at doing it because the reason he left the franchise was he thought he was being stereotyped. He wound up playing the part twice more, though. Once in
Never Say Never.
Never Say Never was the not one and only non-Barcoli film.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the original Casino Royale. All the rest of them have been Barcoli films.
Hmm.
Right. Well, that to me was... I liked Never Say Never Again, but they couldn't follow the format as the Barcoli films. They couldn't do it because of infringement rights, obviously. But they covered it pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing I can think of as the cast member who said that they were too important to leave, you know, so that they wouldn't leave the show... would be with the cast of Friends, because they all stuck together. And every other place I can think of, everybody said, oh, we're, you know, you can't replace us. And then they go and did. You know, the Dukes of Hazzard. I can't, that's the only thing off the top of my head. Dukes of Hazzard. New York Undercover was a television show on Fox about cops, and the two main leads said, yeah, we can't, you can't do it, fellas, and they replaced them. But the cast of Friends was the only one that held together and stayed.
That was a brilliant, brilliant move on their part.
Yeah.
Because they knew, yes, they knew it. They all banded together. They were going to get that million an episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's such a great strategy, you know, that they probably all got together and they decided that if we all stick together, you know, they can't do the show without all of us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant.
Yeah, and it probably also... if they were smart, they might have taken a lesson from all the characters over the course of years who got big in a show and then got had creative differences.
Suzanne Summers.
Yeah, Suzanne Summers.
Farrah Fawcett.
Farrah Fawcett and Bonanza, the Pernell Roberts. There were just dozens of actors who felt that there were greener fields elsewhere and left the series, and of course you almost never heard of them again. The actors who managed to come back are very few. Robert Hagman, oddly enough, was one of them.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I Dream of Jeannie, and then Larry Hagman. Yeah, I'm sorry. I Dream of Jeannie, and J.R. Irving in
Dallas.
Yeah, kept wanting to say Texas for some reason. And, but But, you know, the thing of it is the reason is they get stereotyped. The image of them as this particular character sort of gets burned in the public's consciousness, and the public doesn't want to see them doing anything else. And as a general rule, the rights of that particular character they were doing is tied up in the original show. I mean, that's basically what happened to Suzanne Summers. Her shtick was the Chrissy character, the ditzy blonde. And once she left it, they actually took her to court and said, "You may never play a ditzy blonde ever again, because that's our character." You know, she tried to argue that the ditzy blonde could be found in all kinds of plays, which it can. But they claimed that, first of all, you learned it from us, and second of all, we put our unique spin on it, and don't ask me what it was, and so you can't ever do it again, and they got a judge to agree.
That actually reminds me of something I heard a long time ago about Betty Boop. They said that she didn't want to. It was based on an actress, the character Betty Boop.
Yeah,
tried to claim some money rights for it.
Yeah, the Boop Boop Doop girl. I forget her name, but she was the one who started Boop Boop Doop singing. Boop Boop Doop. Boop Boop Doop.
And she said that she tried to take on the court to try. I guess it was either the copyright or try to get some money from the character. And then the company brought out a whole string of girls that all dressed the same.
Yeah.
Anybody can do this. It's not just you.
Yeah. Or another example. The 1950s character, who incidentally can be seen in the worst movie in the world, Plan 9 from Outer Space, Vampira, sued Elvira for stealing her character and lost in court. But again, they pulled out a whole string of girls who were doing the vampirous bit and the sexy vampirous bit, I should say. So, it's nothing new under the sun.
Let's not forget the Lone Ranger, when he had to walk around with sunglasses,
yeah,
instead of the mask.
Right. Eventually, though, they let him go back to the mask because they figured it was good publicity.
Yeah. Yeah, but for a while it was like infringement rights, so he walked around with like the dark sunglasses.
Right.
And the cowboy hat and everything like that.
Yeah. Fun. Well, you know, a lot of what he was wearing couldn't really be copyrighted because the Lone Ranger recall, well, he did have sort of a suit. My mother always used to point out that there was no zipper. But, it was basically light blue trousers and light blue shirt and the white hat and, of course, the mask. And so what he did was he wore the mask that looked as much, or rather, he wore the sunglasses that looked as much like the mask as possible. I actually saw them, and by George, they did look like the mask.
He looked like Stevie Wonder Ranger. I don't know.
Yeah. Incidentally, just a little aside, Clayton Moore was in full costume driving home from an appearance when he was witness to a kid have a single vehicle motorcycle accident. And he acted the hero. He pulled over immediately, and he gave the kid first aid and made certain he was clear of the wreck and all that. And the kid who had been knocked unconscious opened his eyes, looked up at him, and says, "I always knew you'd come for me." He goes, turned out just by chance he was the world's biggest Lone Ranger fan. He really was rescued by his hero.
I would imagine he would have said, "Next time I'm going to wear a crash helmet."
So, speaking of actors and Hollywood,
Mr. Segway.
As you all know, the day before the Oscars were announced, the Razzies are announced, and we much more care about the Razzies than the Oscars anyway over here.
Oh, yeah, I love the Razzies.
Of note, the worst movies, two of note for us, would be The Last Airbender and The Eclipse Movie, up for Razzies as the worst movie. Actor would be Taylor Lautner and Robert Pattinson, who were both in Eclipse for Worst Actor. Actress would be Kristen Stewart, who's in Eclipse, and Megan Fox for Jonah Hex. And a new title, I don't know if this was out last year, but a new category is called The Misuse of 3D, which for this would be The Clash of the Titans, The Saw 3D, and The Last Airbender. So that's a very interesting thing to have out, that they're really going hard on the Eclipse as being one of the worst movies of the year. And, you know, it made a whole bunch of money this year, so I don't know, what does that exactly translate to?
Well, that translates to everybody who read the book, all the kids, all the teenagers jumped on that movie to see it. They're not gonna care what the critics say. They're gonna go see it. They love the books. Yeah. It's made for these kids, and that's it.
Yeah, they just want to see a visualization of their favorite characters and locales. While the movie is actually on, they're probably thinking in terms of the original plot in the book.
But you'd think, you know, the Razzies are going to pick on something. Why pick on Eclipse, you know, as opposed to all the other bad movies that are out there? If it's such a popular movie, why would they go after that one?
Yeah, why would they pick on that instead of Skyline?
I don't know why you don't like that movie.
I don't like, do you want to know? It was one of our themes for the show. I don't like it because of the ending. It ruined the whole picture for me.
All right, fair enough.
And besides, during the picture, there was terrible acting. The screenplay was so bad. And the ending was like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
The actress was not nominated. Megan Fox was for her portrayal in Jonah Hex, see? And we both hated that movie.
Yeah, well, we liked her.
Yes, we loved her, but it was just like a Halle Berry in Catwoman. She actually won Razzie for that.
I remember we were commenting, and I said, I wish she had more costumes.
Yes.
Less clothes. Yeah. Because I think through that whole thing, she wore the one thing, right?
Yeah, and the corset with the Western frilly bottom part, whatever that's called. Do we have a name for that? The dress that they wear in the old Western?
Well, the top is a bustier. I think that you just call it a skirt or a dress, yeah. One of these days, somebody's going to get it right, and they're going to make a good, weird Western, because I happen to like weird westerns, you know, mixing a western with a ghost story or with magic or whatever. It is a viable genre, at least in books. Someday someone's going to do a decent job in the movies. They haven't yet.
Aren't they coming out?
Yeah,
Aren't they coming out with the
cowboys
and aliens.
Yeah,
yeah. But I'm reserving judgment on that until I have a chance and find out more about it. I saw the trailer, which was odd.
I don't know. Any movie with two highly popular actors and an action-type thing done by Jon Favreau, who's, you know, been pretty good with his track record, especially in a fantasy genre, I think it might be a hit. I personally am not crazy about it, but I'm going to say it's going to be a big moneymaker, at very least.
Well, I certainly hope it's decent, but I'd rather pay my money to see a good film than waste my money on a bad one.
The Wild Wild West series.
Yeah, there's a good example of Weird West, as a matter of fact. It's not a supernatural mix, but it was a spy mix.
Jules, right.
Yeah, matter of fact, you might call that almost a steampunk series.
The what?
Almost a steampunk series.
Okay, yeah. Mark, are you aware of the series, the Wild Wild West series?
I am familiar with it. I've never seen it, but I only am aware of it because of the movie that came out with Kevin Kline and Will Smith.
The series was better. You know,
I'll tell you, I couldn't wait for Friday nights to watch Wild Wild West.
Yeah. It was Jules Verne, science fiction.
It was actually said that that movie was sort of an amalgam of what the Superman Returns movie was going to be before they made the one with Brandon Routh. Kevin Smith, who was a comic book writer, was approached to write a draft, and the guy who was behind the scenes of the Wild Wild West told him that he wanted a giant arachnid monster fighting. He wanted Superman to fight a giant arachnid monster, and he loves giant arachnids, and that's why in Wild West it one showed up at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's see. We have a quick break. We good for a quick break?
Sure.
All right, we'll be right back. We came from the radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Was hot. Now, back to our show.
And we are back with Camp and Radio. It's your host, Mark Torres, speaking along with Charlie Saldino on the phone and Tom Ross sitting behind the booth. Charlie, I'm going to ask you, because I couldn't place it. Do you know what that song was from?
I was you know, I thought it was Star Crash first, and then I said, no, and then I said, what the heck is this? I did not know what this was.
So, what was it?
It's a theme to the last remake of The Time Machine.
Wherein
the New York Public Library saves all of civilization.
Okay. I saw that movie, and I was like, it seemed familiar, but I couldn't quite place where it was from.
Yeah, it's the theme from not the George Pal version, but the other Time Machine.
The one with Guy Pearce, right?
I guess so. Truthfully, I don't really remember the names of the actors.
So, this week, I would like to talk about... We've covered a whole... just about every aspect of a movie, but this week I want to cover the stuntman. I find it interesting that nowadays we're always talking about the action sequences and how much more difficult they are and how the use of computers actually sort of sometimes even replaced the stunt work. But back in the old days, if I remember, the 80s and 90s, it was a big deal for the actor to do their own stunts.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they had body doubles. And does it make it a better production or worse production knowing that the guy doing the action stunt work sequences is not in fact the main lead that you're paying your money to see?
Truthfully, I personally think that it's mostly a publicity gimmick. When the movie's shot correctly, you can't really tell who's in the stunt, or it always looks like the leading man.
What about you, Charlie? What are your thoughts on the stunt man?
Well, I have a good friend that's a stunt man. His name is Jack Gill. He worked on a lot of famous movies. His specialty is motorcycles. You know, motorcycles, car crashes. He's a director now. And he worked on Hook. And my thing is, in this day and age, when you're coming up to all these younger actors that are into this adventure thing and they want to do their own stunts, Angelina Jolie insisted on doing the riding sequence in Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
Right.
You know, when she was firing the shotguns from the horse?
Yeah.
I mean, the producers cringe because their stars could get hurt, and that could hold up production.
But terrifies them.
The directors love it because it adds feasibility to the scene because you could actually see the actor doing the stunt.
So does that, does it help the movie or does it hurt the movie, whether you can or cannot see the actor?
I think it helps the movie a hell of a lot to have the actors and the actresses do their own stunts. Because number one, it helps it because it's a publicity thing. Like, you look at all the Jackie Chan films.
Right.
Right. Well, that'd be one of the...
He does everything in that, and people know it, and people know that... when there is an amazing scene, that's Jackie doing it. You know, even though you can't see him sometimes, that's him doing it.
Yeah, well, a martial arts master would be one of the exceptions to the rule about not wanting actors to do their own stunts because they might get hurt. I mean, someone like Jackie Chan or the late, great Bruce Lee, they were probably the only people in the world who could do the things that they did. And unless you were to go totally CGI, which in the days of Bruce Lee wasn't an option, there's no other way you could get those stunts except to have them done by the guy who was the expert, who also happened to be the star of the film.
Well, speaking of Jackie Chan, I do recall seeing his older works that sometimes the people who he fought were stunt doubles. And he actually said about Michelle Yeoh that no other woman can do their own stunts except for her. That's how good she was in the movies. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it actually helps or hurts it, especially when nowadays if you see something like, I'm going to throw out The Matrix, the second one. You know, it was all computer animation for Keanu Reeves doing most of the stunt work when he was fighting a whole group of people. And I don't know if it actually hurts it or not. I think that if you're watching a movie, you should know that, you know, it's not always the actors. Stand-ins they have, they sometimes have voice dubbing. So it doesn't affect it as much. It might take away from something as the enjoyment of the movie, but overall I think it really... I can't go either way. I'm actually on the fence with it.
Well, I'll tell you, like, it doesn't hurt the Bond films because a lot of those stunts, it looks like you know, the actor doing it.
Right.
He has such good stunt doubles, but that's when you do it. But if you're, like back in the day, in the old days, you can actually see the fight scenes.
Yeah.
You can actually see that it's not the same guy. And that was one of the funniest things, that Benny Hill used to do skits. Benny Hill, and Tom could remember this, Benny Hill used to do skits where they actually had the big actor, and then they would have a fight scene, and they put a little old man with his wig on, and like it just like looked nothing like him, wasn't the same build. And it was there just to make fun of these films that they do that.
Yeah.
You know?
It was
hysterical.
Yeah, incidentally, here talking about making the guy do his own stunt. One of the biggest movies of all time, Gone with the Wind. The guy who played the character Scarlett O'Hara's father, Mr. O'Hara, he had a psychological terror of horses, and. You just couldn't stand to be near the beasts. But the problem was the character was supposed to be a great horseman. A great Irish horseman. And in one of the climactic scenes where he's supposed to say something to Scarlett from on top of his horse and then ride off and then get killed in a riding accident. He wanted a stunt double to be sitting on top of it. And the guy said, no, we just can't do it. You've got to sit on the horse. And don't worry, look, we'll hold the reins and it won't move anywhere. You'll just be sitting on a platform. That guy was absolutely terrified, but, you know, the movie had to be made. And he sure as heck didn't want it getting out into the tabloids that he was scared of horses. So he reluctantly agreed to do it. And first of all, to get him on the horse, I had to like literally put a ladder against the animal. He climbed up and he nervously sat in. They put his boots in the stirrups and gave him the reins to hold. And then, you know, remove the ladder and put what's her name, who played Scarlett, in front of him, and he went through his lines. Then, as soon as he was done, the director, who was holding the reins behind the scenes, let him go and whacked the rear end of the horse, and the cameras just kept rolling as he went riding off into the sunset, so that he could get some film of him actually riding to use in that final film. And of course they had to not use what he was actually saying, because what he was saying I can't even repeat over the airwaves. But, get me off of this rotten egg! It's going to kill me! Get me out of here! Help!
You actually mentioned, Charlie, about the Benny Hill sketch. There was a movie called I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, with the Wayans brothers. And they did the same thing, where there was a female in the role, and then they put a man in a dress, and they put, like, the worst, you know, the worst thing to...
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And the thing
was
hysterical. I didn't get the joke the first time I saw it, because I didn't know that back in the old days they actually changed off the actors. I always thought it was the same person.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. I was like, why is that guy... What happened to the girl? Why is that guy in a dress? But then it was explained to me that, you know, in the old days, they didn't allow most of the time, their main stars to do the stunts.
Yeah, so sometimes you could actually see it in the old Batman films.
Yeah.
In the old Batman series. Like when they had, like the actors playing,
the fight scenes,
Vincent Price or something like that. And you could see it. They show a distance shot. And every once in a while, you catch it, you know?
So doesn't that make it more enjoyable? Just to like, oh, that's not really him?
Makes it funny.
Yes,
but I don't think... But like I said, my point is, this with these young actors now, it's not like, you know, the director's making them do the stunt. They want to do it.
Right.
They find it exciting. Like, you know, they want to be like... what's his name? Oh, God.
Dar Robinson, the greatest stuntman of all time?
No. no, oh, come on, Wolverine.
Oh, Hugh Jackman?
You thank you, Hugh Jackman. They hang him by wires and fly him all over the place. He loves it. You know?
Yeah, I think that the people love it, but is it, you know, is it really that necessary, is the question.
Well,
for directors, they love it because they could get a close-up in the middle of the stunt. They could get as close as they want.
Right.
Because everybody's going to see it's the actor and not, like, the guy in the dress.
I remember...
Just to bounce back to what you said before about the old Batman series, a story I happen to know. You know that shot they used every week of the Batmobile roaring out of the Batcave and making that
beat? Yeah, stock footage.
Stock footage and going around that turn and then going through the gate that went down. And I happen to know that what it was, there was a stunt driver driving the Batmobile, but Robin really was Burt Ward because he was facing the camera. And the thing of it was, you know, they really were taking that big turn at a high speed. They say he was bruised from under his arm to his knee because he kept slamming into the side of the car. He kept complaining, why can't you get a stunt man to do this? Like, you have the stunt driver. And they said, well, unfortunately, you're closer to camera and your mask just doesn't hide enough of your face.
There you go.
Oh, in True Lies, I remember that Jamie Lee Curtis said that she really wanted to do that stunt at the end of the movie, the climax of the movie, when she's hanging from the limo on the helicopter.
Right.
And you can actually see that whole one shot that the car is driving off the actual, from the
right.
bridge when it's out. It was really her. And, you know, it's cool, but was it necessary? Did it actually make the movie any better?
Well,
in that case, They could have did it without her, but again, I'm sure it was the director's choice when she said she wanted to do it, to talk to the stunt people and say, how feasible is this, where she won't get hurt, where theory she won't get hurt, and we can get a good shot from it, and when could we cut, and when could we,
Right.
Stuff like that. Even if you remember, even in the Academy Awards, she was airlifted down,
right?
Onto the stage, and then she had a green screen behind her, and they did a whole production on that.
Well, here's another one for you. If you remember the movie The Great Escape, the motorcycle chase at the end between Steve McQueen and a German motorcyclist. Actually, Steve McQueen played both motorcyclists, which is why the German had that huge helmet on, and there was never a shot of his face. But yeah. McQueen said that just wasn't another available stunt motorcyclist who could keep up with him. So he basically raced himself, and it was all done with trick photography.
Yeah.
If you recall one of the most famous car chases in the world, the one in Bullet. He really was driving the green Mustang, and they really did get the finest stunt driver in the world to drive the other vehicle. I think it was a Charger, but I could be wrong about that. And, again, because he said he only wanted to work with the best, and he wanted this to be the absolute gold standard of car chase scenes, and to his credit, he more or less got it.
And, we're bringing it down to the stage with the Spider-Man fiasco that's going on right now. The actor is doing his own stunts, and they still have stunt men. So, for Spider-Man, does it matter if it's actually the actor inside the whole Spider-Man mask doing the role, doing the stunts and stuff?
Well, as we just found out, yes, it does matter. Because, when they're not going to tie off ropes, you might be losing your bread and butter stuff.
Right, let's say in the Tobey Maguire movies, there was complaints that they didn't show enough of Tobey Maguire without the mask. That's why in the second one he always had his mask ripped off. So is that a big deal to have a computer generated Spider-Man running around, or just having him in the suit?
Well, in the Spider-Man movies, the way he flies through the city, you can't help but have a computer generated Spider-Man, because there's no way you're going to get that same effect with a stunt guy really doing those things, because there is no way. You know how much time they would have to spend on that, and then speed up the film, and then piece film together, when they can make one computer-generated, you know,
right
scene. So I'm saying, you know, sometimes it's very necessary for that computer-generated stuff.
So we are actually almost out of time. We got less than a minute, and we're going to have to go. So if you miss any part of the show, you can go online to www.itcamefromtheradio.com. You can listen to our archives. It should be up in a week. Charlie, thanks for calling in. Tom, thanks for helping us out. And
You're welcome.
See you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.